The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back. Today, we're diving deep into something fundamental, something that really shapes how we see ourselves, this age-old battle between reason and emotion.
That's right. You hear it all the time, don't you? Be rational, don't be emotional, as if feelings are just static noise getting in the way of clear thinking.
Exactly. It's this idea that the logical brain is, you know, the hero, and the emotional heart is the messy, unreliable sidekick, or maybe even the villain.
Well, that's the myth we're tackling. It's a really old idea. It goes back to Plato, the Stoics.
Yeah.
They saw passion as this disruptive force.
But the science we're looking at today, especially drawing from cognitive scientist Dylan Evans' work, turns that completely on its head.
It really does. Our deep dive is going to show you this split. It's actually false. Misleading, even. Emotions aren't the enemy of reason.
So what are they then? The claim is pretty bold. They're highly rational systems, indispensable partners, actually, to making good decisions.
That's the core mission for us today. We want you to get a quick, solid, scientific grasp of what emotions are really for. There's this deep evolutionary wisdom packed into what we often just call gut feelings.
And Dylan Evans is kind of the perfect guide for this, isn't he? His background is so interesting. Philosophy, AI, evolutionary psychology.
Exactly. He brings all these different fields together to synthesize this really powerful idea.
Yeah.
Our emotions are like incredibly sophisticated software, inherited biological programs.
So time to stop thinking of them as bugs in the system.
Definitely. Time to see them as features. Really crucial features.
Okay, let's unpack that. Rational systems. That sounds counterintuitive. When we say rational, we usually mean slow, conscious, deliberate thought, right?
Right. The common usage. But from an evolutionary perspective, rational means something more like optimally designed to achieve a specific adaptive goal. It's about efficiency and success in a given environment.
So why did emotions evolve if we already had consciousness, this, you know, thinking brain?
Speed. It's all about adaptive efficiency. Think of emotions as these specialized tools, these algorithms honed by natural selection over millennia.
Algorithms? Like computer programs?
Sort of, yeah. They're designed to solve specific recurring problems our ancestors faced again and again in what scientists call the environment of evolutionary adaptiveness.
Okay, give me an example, like seeing a predator.
Perfect example. If you see something that might be a lion in the grass, you don't have time for a slow, conscious debate. Is that pattern definitely feline? What are the pros and cons of running versus hiding?
Huh. You'd be lunched by the time you finish the first bullet point.
Precisely. The fear program doesn't wait. It makes an incredibly fast calculation based on pattern recognition, predicts the likely outcome, which is, you know, bad, and triggers an immediate action plan. Fight or flight.
Faster than you can even consciously think lion.
Much faster. And that system, evaluating input, predicting outcome, motivating survival-enhancing action based on millennia of data about what works, that is a highly rational system in the biological sense. It maximizes your chances of survival.
And it's important to stress, this isn't just like feeling scared. It's a whole package deal.
Absolutely. Evans, and the research he draws on, clarifies this. An emotion isn't just the subjective feeling. It's a complex system with usually four parts.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's the cognitive appraisal, the lightning-fast assessment like danger, then the physiological response, heart-pounding adrenaline dump. Third is the subjective feeling, the internal sensation of panic or fear. And fourth, the action tendency, that powerful urge to do something like run or freeze.
Wow, so it's a whole integrated command center firing up instantly.
You got it. A rapid response mechanism.
Okay, so this challenges that ideal we have, you know? The super logical person, the Mr. Spock type, who makes decisions purely on data, no messy feelings involved.
Right, we tend to think that removing emotion would lead to perfect decisions. But the neurology, the actual brain science, tells a very different story. It's fascinating stuff.
This is where Antonio Damasio's work comes in.
Exactly. Damasio studied patients with very specific brain damage, particularly to the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. This is the area that kind of connects our thinking brain with our emotional signals.
And the famous case is Elliot.
Yes, a patient known as Elliot. After surgery for a brain tumor in that area, Elliot's IQ was fine. His memory was intact. His logical reasoning skills were still sharp.
So if emotions just get in the way, he should have been the ultimate rational decision maker, right?
You'd think so.
Mm-hmm.
But he became, well, the researchers describe him as pathologically indecisive, utterly crippled when it came to making choices.
Even simple ones.
Ridiculously simple ones. He could spend hours deliberating which pen to use, blue or black, or trying to decide which day to schedule his next appointment. He could list all the pros and cons, analyze everything logically.
But he couldn't actually choose.
He couldn't choose because nothing mattered more than anything else. He lacked what Damasio called somatic markers.
Somatic markers. Like gut feeling.
Essentially, yes. Those quick bodily signals that tag options with a value, this feels good safe or this feels bad dangerous, they help us narrow down the possibilities and assign importance. Without them, Elliot's logic just spun endlessly. He had the map, but no compass telling him which way to go.
So the big takeaway here, the really counterintuitive point,
is that someone without emotions isn't a hyper-rational being. They're actually, as Evans puts it, a disabled decision maker.
Wow. Reason needs emotion to work properly.
Absolutely. Emotion provides the value, the motivation, the oomph that allows reason to prioritize and act. They have to work together. You can't be effectively rational without your emotions guiding the process.
Okay, so these are ancient rational programs. Let's look at a couple more specific examples. You mentioned fear. What about something like disgust? Seems purely negative.
Ugh. But disgust has a brilliant evolutionary logic. It's the disease avoidance program. Its job is to solve the critical problem of contamination.
So, rotten food, waste products, things that could make you sick.
Precisely. When your senses detect cues associated with pathogens, a bad smell, a slimy texture, the sight of decay, the disgust program instantly kicks in. It makes you recoil, maybe feel nauseous.
And make that classic disgusted face, yeah. Right? Wrinkled nose, narrowed eyes.
Exactly. And even that facial expression is functional. It physically reduces your intake of potentially contaminated air or particles. It's a sophisticated biological public health system built right into us. It's not just yuck, it's danger, pathogens. Highly rational for survival.
Okay, that makes sense for physical survival. But what about the emotions that seem purely social, like guilt or shame? How do they fit this adaptive, rational model?
Those are fascinating. They're what you might call the social cooperation emotions. Humans are intensely social animals. Our survival depends on group living and cooperation.
Right, we can't go it alone.
Not effectively. So natural selection needed ways to manage group dynamics, to enforce norms and maintain cooperation without constant external policing, which is really inefficient.
And guilt is part of that.
Guilt is like the internal enforcement mechanism. When you violate a social rule, break a promise, cheat, harm someone in the group, guilt kicks in. It feels bad, and it motivates you to repair the damage.
To apologize, make amends, restore the relationship.
Exactly. It's the relationship repair program. Shame is a bit different, though related. Shame is more about your perceived social standing itself. Feeling shame signals that your status or value within the group is threatened, often because of a public failure or transgression.
So both are pushing you towards behaving in ways that keep the group cohesive.
Precisely. They help maintain social harmony and cooperation, which were absolutely essential for our ancestors' survival and success. Without these internal regulators, large-scale cooperation would be much harder, maybe impossible. Mm. They are deeply rational tools for navigating the social world.
It really shifts your perspective on feeling guilty. It's not just feeling bad, it's your brain telling you to fix a social connection.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so we're running these ancient, super-fast, rational programs. But our world today looks nothing like the ancestral savanna. We've got smartphones, social media, financial markets. How does that work or not work?
That's the crux of so many modern problems. This is where the idea of evolutionary mismatches comes in. It's a huge concept.
Mismatches, meaning the programs don't fit the current environment.
Exactly. Our emotional systems were brilliantly designed for that world, the environment of evolutionary adaptedness. They haven't had time, evolutionarily speaking, to catch up to the lightning-fast changes of modern civilization.
There's a great quote you mentioned earlier, something about modern anxiety.
Yes, it captures it perfectly. Modern anxiety often results from ancient fear systems responding to modern threats they were never designed to handle.
That clicks. Like getting stressed about public speaking or seeing a negative comment online or worrying about taxes. My heart pounds. I feel that dread. But there's no lion.
Right. Your ancient fear program, designed for immediate physical threats, is being triggered by symbolic threats. Threats to social standing, resources, future security. To your brain, especially the older parts, these can feel just as life-threatening as a predator.
And because these modern threats are often chronic, not sudden attacks, the system stays activated.
Leading to chronic stress, anxiety, burnout. The emotional response itself is rational given the program's original design, but it's completely maladaptive in the modern context. It's the wrong tool for the job, often.
Understanding that mismatch seems key, which leads us nicely into emotional intelligence, or EQ. We hear that term a lot. How does Evans view it in this context?
Well, crucially, he clarifies that EQ is not about suppressing emotions. It's not about trying to be purely logical and ignoring the fear or the anger.
So it's not about just gritting your teeth through the anxiety.
No, not at all. He frames EQ as understanding and skillfully working with them. It's about becoming literate in your own emotional signals.
Literacy, like learning to read the data they're providing.
Exactly. Recognizing an emotion not just as a raw feeling to be pushed away, but as an information signal, a piece of potentially valuable data from this sophisticated ancient system.
So if I feel angry in a meeting, instead of just blowing up or shutting down,
you pause, you notice the anger, and you ask, okay, what information is this anger signal carrying? What boundary does this program think has been crossed? What goal is being blocked? What perceived injustice is triggering this defense?
Ah, so you use your conscious brain to interpret the signal from the faster, older system.
Precisely. You decode the message. That transforms the emotion from just a disruptive force into actionable insight. If you know anger often signals a blocked goal, you can then rationally figure out what goal is blocked and how to address it, rather than just lashing out.
That's applying reason to the emotion, not trying to replace emotion with reason.
That's the essence of it. It's about leveraging the wisdom embedded in the emotion, even when it fires in a mismatched context. That's real emotional management.
This perspective also seems really relevant when we think about the future, maybe with AI. The sources touch on artificial emotions.
Yeah, it's a fascinating final point. The sheer difficulty of trying to build AI that can navigate the complex, value-laden real world, maybe even needing something like emotions, really highlights how incredible our own biological emotional intelligence is.
Trying to replicate it makes us appreciate the original.
Definitely. We can't build truly effective interactive AI without figuring out how to give it some kind of internal valuing system, something analogous to our somatic markers that tells it what's important, what matters. Understanding our own emotions becomes critical for designing machines we can actually live and work with effectively.
It really is a complete flip. We started with emotion as the irrational enemy of thought.
Mm-hmm. The bug in the system.
And we've ended up seeing emotions as these incredibly sophisticated, logical, evolved features. They're not noise. They're super fast, data-rich signals based on millennia of survival experience.
The accumulated wisdom of our ancestors, running like code in our nervous system.
So the final thought to leave everyone with, if our emotions really do hold this deep evolutionary logic,
then the really big question becomes, how do we start designing our world, our workplaces, our political systems, our technology, in ways that actually respect and integrate this emotional intelligence, instead of always building things based on the flawed assumption that humans are or should be purely rational calculation machines?
How do we build systems that work with our evolved nature, including our emotional logic, rather than constantly fighting against it?
That feels like the challenge, doesn't it? If we ignore the rational logic embedded in our emotions, are we setting ourselves up for failure by ignoring one of our most powerful decision-making tools? Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.